Hi, and welcome to episode 7 of the Europe.com podcast. The Europe.com podcast explores campaigning for Europe ahead of the 2019 European Parliament elections. My name is Michael Bassetta, political scientist at the University of Copenhagen, and I'll be your host. The Europe.com podcast is developed in cooperation with the European Committee of the Regions. Check them out at cor.europa.eu. All right, here's the show. Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this final episode of the Europe.com podcast series. This episode was filmed after the Europe.com conference, and it is a conversation with Stephen Boucher, Managing Director at Foundation Euractiv, and Kieran McCarthy, member of the European Committee of the Regions and Cork City Council. And this conversation is available as a live stream as well, which you can find on the European Committee of the Regions Facebook page or by going to the episode description of this podcast. And in this conversation, we sit down and discuss some of the takeaways from the conference, but also getting Stephen's and Kieran's perspectives on how to campaign for Europe ahead of the 2019 European Parliament elections. And we go into everything from the dangers of filter bubbles and social media to how to translate some of the lessons learned at the European level going down into the local level. And I think this conversation takes off really a dimension of discussing that broader European vision and making personal connections with voters on the ground. So it's a super interesting conversation, and it's going to cap off the Europe.com podcast series. I hope you've had as much fun listening as I've had putting it together. And more importantly, I hope that you got something out of it. So if you find the series useful, tell a friend, tell a colleague, or shoot it around on social media. Help spread the word. But without further ado, let me go ahead and cut to my conversation with Stephen Boucher and Kieran McCarthy, who work in different areas of communication. So part of the motivation for this podcast is to talk about how two different professionals working in the European Union with different hats think about communication, specifically ahead of the 2019 European Parliament elections coming up. So, Stephen, why don't we start with you? You're a managing director at the Euractiv Foundation. Can you give us a bit of an introduction into the foundation and the kind of work that you do there?
Sure. So Euractiv is this specialized media on EU matters. So those who follow EU policies and EU politics stuff, etc., know Euractiv. And a bit more than 10 years ago, it created this foundation in the sense of a think tank that's really trying to promote a healthy media sector in Europe in the interest of European democracy. So we work on stuff like the independence of the media, inventing new business models in the face of technological changes, how to address disinformation issues. And this is, of course, a concern ahead of the forthcoming European Parliament elections. That's the sort of stuff we worry about and try to contribute to.
All super timely topics, and I guess we'll come back and I'll sort of pick those apart. But Kieran McCarthy, why don't we get a little introduction into what you do, range.
Yeah, wide range. I mean, I suppose, look, I'm a local historian back home. I'm a geographer by trade, so I have an interest in identity and placemaking and branding and memory and sense of belonging. I'm rooted in that. But I'm a city councillor, a local government councillor in Cork in the south of Ireland. And I've been a city councillor with that hat and that role for the last 9 years. My local history stuff is over 25 years. And then I decided to run for local politics because I had interest in my city. And then 4 years ago, I got an invite to come on the Committee of the Regions. So then I jumped from the local to the European. Hmm. And so the last 4 years has been this enormous learning curve. But what is interesting is that it all comes back to the citizen, we say, in my constituency or someone's door I'm going to knock at. I mean, actually, I have local elections, my third, if I want to get elected for a third term, next May. And actually, they coincide with the European elections. So I will have, I will be campaigning in the backdrop of MEPs from my region also out in the doors trying to convert, I suppose, door knocking to votes. And I've enjoyed the last 2 days. I've kind of got a lot of ideas, from my own local elections. But also, I mean, it was so refreshing to see the energy in the room the last 2 days. And a lot of young people, a lot of kind of older professionals and everyone kind of working together to say, look, here are the top four things that we should actually do kind of going forward. Mm-hmm. So it has been an enjoyable experience. But I have to say my last 4 years has also been enjoyable. I mean, I do a lot of field work with the Committee of the Regions. In other words, I represent the Committee of the Regions in different cities and different regions. So every 3 or 4 weeks, I'm sent to a different city and a different region to talk about innovation or digital or branding. And sometimes the topics you mightn't be a specialist in, but you become a specialist in. So in one sense, I'm not a communication specialist, but I do have knowledge of, I suppose, door knocking and actually what's behind people's doors, and that you could be presented with anything. And so it doesn't matter if you're going with a European pamphlet or a local pamphlet, when someone answers the door or you speak to someone at a street corner or in a shopping center, that person is in their own bubble at that particular point in time. They're on their own kind of journey on that particular day, and you have 2 minutes, 3 minutes to convince them of your argument. And they could be angry, sad, and happy. I mean, and you really have to kind of be very much aware of that. So I think for me, the last 2 days has been, yes, about the EU, but also about kind of human psychology as well, and how we actually get people to vote. I suppose one of the first sessions I went to was like, I'm in my region, I'm going to vote, or I'm going to vote this time out. And that was actually a great start for me. And I have to say, at the start of this week, I was actually the Web Summit in Lisbon. And so my whole week has actually been on that there are winds of change coming, and that we all must be ready for these winds of change. But ultimately, it's up to us. I think we need to appreciate people's, I don't know, personal journey in life as well. Not everyone's going to vote, but we need to get people out to vote as much as possible.
Right. And I think what's interesting about your experience is that you're a politician who's actually been on the ground. And I think when we talk about communication, especially in EuropeCom and in this day and age, it's a lot about digital communication, social media, technology. So I want to ask you first, Stephen, about what are some of the main, I guess, trends or concerns leading up to the 2019 European Parliament elections around digital and digital communication? And then I want to switch to the ground game and talk about that door knocking at the very local level. But so yeah, what are those main challenges, especially that EuropeActive is looking at ahead of these European Parliament elections?
Well, there are so many concerns when it comes to social media and politics that I'll pick two. But before, I'll say that there are, of course, we tend to forget sometimes that social media can be a great force for politics. They can be a great force to introduce new topics. And we've seen the Me Too, for instance, wave that has had, in my view, some real benefits. We know also how it can be mobilized to get people campaigning, etc. Now, in terms of the forthcoming elections, the first concern I have is in terms of what's called the filter bubbles, how social media and platforms, as we call them now in the jargon, can lead to less constructive conversations because people are in their bubbles with like-minded people, bubbles created by algorithms. So I know the platforms are trying to address this. They've admitted that this was an issue. And in those bubbles, we know that this has been used with the advertising tools to target negative messages at some people. Now, my second concern is something you shared, which is to get out the vote, negative messages work much better than positive messages. Now, with that in mind, how do we get people who want to campaign on a positive platform, be it about Europe is a potentially European integration, European cooperation is potentially a good thing, or about tolerance to immigration, tolerance to opening our cultures to other cultures, etc., for instance, or other topics, which are my values. How do you campaign on that and not fall into the trap of the framing of other groups? Now, again, I headed a media before joining the EuropeActive Foundation, and I saw how, that's not social media, but it works the same. If you publish an article with a negative title, a scare about vaccination, for instance, you will get a much better response. Now, actually, that media I was heading, which is about healthy lifestyles, we would actively say vaccination is French media, and there's a concern at the moment by an increasing number of people that vaccination maybe is a worry. Be very proactive saying vaccination is a good thing. Come on, let's not forget the health benefits it's brought. Those articles wouldn't generate much interest. So That's my second concern, the filter bubbles and the amplification that they create of negative news, and how difficult it is for campaigners then to come and say, hey guys, we have positive news for you. We have a vision. We have strong values that we want to campaign on. That for me, and welcome your thoughts, how we overcome this. Mm.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe Kieran, you want to respond?
Yeah, that actually is a huge challenge. I mean, most people, I find actually at the doors, people will ask you that golden question, what are you going to do for me? No, but I found in my own work, and I know that like Ireland has quite a different process. It's a smaller member state. The cities are smaller. Mm. It's easier to get around door to door. I mean, in Brussels, it's impossible to go into the apartment blocks and knock on every door. So there's kind of a different kind of strategy. But I suppose you need to find a way to connect to people, a personal connection. Like we all live our lives in a personal way. I say that from my foundation level as a local historian, like we all speak stories every day. We speak about our family every day. Like I try to convince people that history is important, and they're like, ah, it's just facts and figures. But I'm like, no, you actually speak history every day. You speak about your grandfather and your aunt and uncle, and you actually speak in a personal way. And people are like, oh yeah. So you kind of have to, I don't know, give people another lens, another way to look at the European Union. And I find one of the big challenges I have is that I get so much information out here and I have to bring it back to a small city council. Mm. And for, to me, it's a big city council. So the people I represent, it's a big city council. But in the big scheme of things, it's a small council. We've got a small population of, we'd say, 120,000 people. And next year, my city is going to expand. There's going to be 220,000 people, 210,000 people. But I try to look at the documents out here going, okay, how can I translate that back into a local level? Some of the EU projects that I'm really excited about, for example, Interreg, inter-regional cooperation projects. Like my council has applied for 5 or 6 of these projects in the last 2 years and has won 4 to 5 of these and has won 500,000 euros, was delighted to win such money. But also what's happening is that it's bringing people together in these Interreg projects where managers of different directorates back in my council all of a sudden have to think outside of the box. They have to come up with new lenses to look at different things. And also, like recently, my council is going to host EU Maritime Day in 2020 after Lisbon, which is a huge accolade.
What is it?
It's a maritime day where you get to celebrate all things maritime in a sense. So like jobs, industries, maritime tourism. Ecosystems, tourism, and to do with maritime. And each year, like a different city, a port city actually hosts it. And it's something that was... I mean, I saw it at a conference in northwest Portugal, and I was like, I just sent it back to my great European funding officer. We have a great European funding officer in Cork. And she was poached, but we've got the post is up for advertisement at the moment in the city council. But the person that we had all of a sudden turned that around and said to the council executive, what could we do with that? How can we translate that into a local effect? And how do we get people then who are behind the doors to engage in it? Like who wants to get involved in the kind of the maritime element, and even with things like structural funding, we've had a campaign recently to make sure that there's more awareness of where the structural funding is actually going. I mean, a lot of our insulation projects actually go towards some of our social housing units in the city, and we've 8,000 social housing units. Many of the roofs are, many of the houses are years old and are not up to environmental standards. And we've had to bring these houses up to environmental standards, and we've drawn a cohesion policy. So there's all these kind of different kind of angles. We've also got a Southern Regional Assembly that manages the structural funds. So we need to find new ways of trying to translate the EU jargon into the local jargon, in a sense. And I spent the first year in the Committee of the Regions trying to understand the jargon. And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's what it means. Mm. And how do we translate that? And I think that's one of the biggest problems perhaps the EU actually has, is kind of the translation of all the different projects and what's the effect of these projects on people's lives and the reality of it.
We have these, one of the things we've been talking about a lot in the conference is this idea of generating a European feeling or having some sort of European identity. And I think when I'm hearing you speak, you're talking a lot about like people's roofs and disrepair, right? This is a very, very local issue. Sure. So how do you think from your respective positions that either maybe through the local to get to the European, or how can this European identity be fostered or made known to motivate people to get out and vote in this this upcoming election?
Well, you're looking at me, Michael, so I expect you. Well, I'm going to pronounce two dirty words, direct democracy. If we give citizens greater say into European matters, if we allow them, if we give them means to influence EU decision-making, and we give the EU greater powers, because, for instance, citizens expect the EU to help with jobs, help with employment. That's, for instance, an area that's absolutely crucial, but where member states have most of the competences. Mm. Well, then they'll be interested in the EU, right? It will mobilize not just their minds, which can be to some extent mobilized if you tell them, you know, we've improved roaming rates and we've helped fixed build local infrastructure, roads or energy or other. That, okay, makes sense, but isn't it what you should be doing anyway? With their hearts, you know, like, yes, I am concerned, I am engaged because I see that it matters. Europe at the moment, that's my personal opinion, doesn't have that much power. It has quite a bit in certain fields, etc. I'm not being negative. I'm not seeing the glass half empty, but it's not full either. So, for instance, if we gave citizens the ability to shape part of the EU budget is not that large when you look compare it with member state budgets, but it's significant. If you gave a proportion of that budget, 1-5% for citizens to decide upon. So you could imagine, like Portugal says, at national level, citizens can shape, I think it's 5%, or it's a significant budget for cross-border projects, cross-region project inside Portugal. If we could do the same at EU level, then your northern, southern Irish citizens, your Portuguese, Spanish citizens, or whatever, we could think of other formats. They would feel that Europe is very relevant and they would go find out the information, which is already out there in lots of brilliant websites and Twitter feeds and formats and videos. I think that's not what's lacking. If we told them, look, you can come up with a project. It can be up to, I don't know, €1 million and it will get funded if it gets a sufficient number of votes and that's your decision. Well, I'm not being naively optimistic. We've seen it happen in cities like Paris, which has a yearly participatory budget of €100 million. You know, it's significant. People, it matters to them. It means something. They get involved. They come up with great projects. There's a great dialogue. It requires a lot of infrastructure and support. You know, you don't just tell people do it. It means that the institutions have to adapt to it also. But it completely changes the dynamics of how people see their administration, how they see the relevance of that institution to their daily lives. It changes their pride in the project. It's not just a flag on the bridge, an EU flag, and they see it in passing and think, well, they don't even notice it. It's my local playground. It's my cross-border citizen facilitation thing. I don't know what they would come up with, but it's theirs. So that would be my not easy answer, because I realize that introducing that is maybe difficult at EU level. But I think, you know, we've reached the limits of how much we could get citizens interested because, again, the EU doesn't have that much power and citizens have virtually no way to influence it other than voting in the European Parliament once every 5 years. So why should they worry about that so much?
And I think one of the interesting initiatives for me was that on our panel, we were talking about the 2019 EP campaign, This Time I'm Voting, and they have built this dashboard where, or maybe they're going to release it soon, where you can go into your particular region and see, like your town, and see what has been funded by the EU. Where have those funds gone?
I mean, I agree with Stephen's point. It's actually it's a great concept that you're actually proposing. I'm a firm believer that 10% of all EU structural funding programs should actually go towards communication. Hmm. I think there are many people who don't know that their main road leading into the city was constructed through EU funds. Or a restoration of their building, of a historic building in the center of their town was by structural funds. Right. Or, I suppose maybe the people who are on Erasmus programs are very conscious of the fact that you're actually on an EU program because you're traveling and you can see where the money is coming from. But I think sometimes we take the EU for granted. And I honestly believe that the EU is as strong as the local and the local is as strong as the EU. Mm. Many locales have got ahead because of EU funding. So the EU needs the local and regional regional authorities. And I think that's the power of the Committee of the Regions as well. Like, we're involved in so many different projects. So our opinion documents that we produce for the Commission and the Parliament are like toolkits. There are so many ideas. And we probably every 2 months have 12, 13, 14 opinions that go through to the Parliament and the Commission. And the Commission and the Parliament work kind of quite closely with us. But we need to build a stronger relationship with the people who are making the policy. I mean, we're proposing ideas and suggestions. So there is a lot of work to do. But also the thing with cities, a lot of the cities and regions have, and like this week, for example, Athens was declared the European Capital of Innovation, which brought everyone together in Athens around the table going, well, here's what we're going to do. And here's what we're going to do for the 1 million euros if we win it. And they actually did win it. And you also have like European capitals of sport, European capitals of culture. My city was European Capital of Culture in 2005. Mm. And 13 years later, there still is a legacy from that in my city. Right. And we're proud of that accolade. So there are other avenues that we just need to be proud of. And sometimes actually a project doesn't have to cost an arm and a leg either. It doesn't have to cost a lot of money. Like some of the, you mentioned the cross-border projects, like the Committee of the Regions is constantly championing these European groupings, territorial cooperation projects, EGTCs, apart from Interreg. Last year I was on the border of France and Spain, the Pyrenees, in an old custom house, and there was three people from France on one side of the table and three on the other side, and they were doing this like this fantastic cultural project and creating walking trails. And I was like, this is really great. This is what the EU is about, but also what that locale was about. I think both are intertwined. Sometimes I don't like the way both are separated. As I said, many locales and regions have got ahead because of EU funds.
Can I disagree slightly for the sake of argument? Because I disagree to some extent. It makes sense. Yes, we should be good at informing citizens about what the EU brings to them. I think I don't agree with everything that the EU does, that EU governments decide together and that whatever the Commission proposes, etc. But it does some important things and it should be communicated. Yes, granted. Second, yes, it should be also very much related to the local level, which is pertinent for people. But that's not enough. If you add 10% of costs to something which citizens largely see negatively, because they've been told so much that their country is contributing to the EU pot. So they're expecting that pot to come back. So that framing is already negative. And they're thinking, well, part of that transfer means these people in Brussels around us getting money. So you're adding 10%. This should be done anyway. I mean, yes, we should communicate about these important things, restoration of buildings, infrastructure of roads and energy, etc. But let's not overestimate the impact of positive messaging around this. I think we need something deeper. And the deeper I'll relate to the second point, which is local, yes, but not only. I mean, imagine if in the US, the federal government forbid itself to talk about the grander issues of what is it to be a nation? What is it to defend the country? What is it to be more competitive, etc.? And the federal level only talked about federal subsidies to local projects. The sense, the soul, the vision, the mission is lost. And okay, whether you say the mission is yes, we can, or make America great again, we're not hearing this in Europe. We're not hearing Europe, we can, or make Europe great again. We're saying we did roaming and we have a new cultural center. Except that's not enough.
Guy Verhofstadt, right? He had a make Europe great again slogan for a while, no?
Well, it came out during the week against Hungary.
Do you want to add anything? I think it's great. I think this is what a live stream medium or a podcast medium is about, right? It's about the deliberation and discourse. So
I think there has to be a mixture of what I call bottom up thinking and top down thinking. And
sure.
I actually agree with probably 90% of what you're actually saying. I'd have an issue with that if we see funding as a negative thing.
No, but
if the public see it as a negative thing, then there's a bigger problem.
Yes.
In terms of that the main gist of the EU project is about funding as well.
So
we need to have a look at that. We need to take that apart and see how we can actually make that into a more positive way.
Absolutely.
I mean, what is interesting, I mean, like, as I say, like every third or fourth week, I go to a different city and a different member state. Mm-hmm. And no one actually, I've never met any mayor or councillor I meet a lot of local people who are involved in an EU project. No, so they're positive and upbeat when I meet them. Yeah. I don't meet negative people as such.
Sure, makes sense.
But everyone asks me, like, are we on the right track? There's actually no one saying to me,
oh, what's the track? Well, that's the vision I'm talking
about.
Well,
it's the vision. Like, I've been into cities and regions. Europe, like, is in a recovery sense. I mean, I don't actually buy into the whole idea that all of the EU is in a crisis. Mm-hmm. Yet there is Brexit problems and there are refugee crises. But if you go into any city, town, region, rural region, like, there's people there with an ambition, there's people there with a plan, and they want to know how they can conduct the plan. If the EU helps them, fair enough. If they can't, then they'll go to the regional assembly or there'll be taxes mm-hmm. in a local area. But I've seen ambition across the EU. I'm not seeing crisis. I mean, I've read a lot in the last kind of weeks and months, or the EU is going to collapse next year or the year after, or once Brexit happens and there's going to be a wipeout of the EU. I'm not seeing that on the ground. Mm. In my field work, I'm not seeing it. Now, that being said, I meet the people who are getting money and they're happy and they're upbeat. Right. But the question I'm coming across is that, are we on the right track? Mm. And I say to the person, yes, you're on the right track, because maybe 3 weeks earlier, I was on the other side of Europe and they've asked the same question. Right. And there's something similar, innovation or environment or climate change. So I think there's a lot of exciting opportunities, but I agree with your point, like, the glass is half full. And we need to try to top up the glass in so many different ways. Beamish actually in Cork in the south of Ireland. Guinness is the national brand. But we need to, we can use so many analogies. Mm-hmm. But for me, and I agree with you, the glass is half full. We need to top it up. We need to find new ways of doing that. And I think the last 2 days of this conference show that there are new lenses and there are new ways of doing things and that we need to engage in that.
Yeah. And if I can add, I mean, I think it's interesting. We've gone from the very supranational grand vision from and all the way down to the local door knocking in Cork, Ireland. But one of the things that came out of this conference for me was the role that civil society is playing. So we've been talking a lot about governments, but I've seen in the past couple of days a lot of really just startup initiatives from civic tech and looking at Facebook ad transparency to games to counter disinformation online. And also a lot of concern about how do we translate the lessons from this conference actually into action. So I wanted to ask you first that, how do we translate what we've learned into action? And then what is the role of civil society in that, supporting government in their process, maybe their long-term vision?
Whoever wants to go first. Easy questions for 3 minutes left. Why don't you start here?
Well, one of the points I made at the conference, or one of my interventions, is that we need to find a personal connection with the person, whether it's at the door or on the street, or we need to find a way to get people interested. And I honestly believe we need to find new ways of getting people involved in kind of civics, involved in their city at a very kind of local level, and people can actually kind of make their way up from there. There is a role for digital technology. I mean, as I said, I spent the first half of my week in Lisbon at the Web Summit, where they were actually questioning the role and use and control of the internet. And we've seen the last couple of weeks where you've got things like Twitter and Facebook that are now kind of looking at kind of trolls and fake news. And there's this huge energy out there at the moment to try to regulate the internet. And I use that term kind of loosely. And actually, at the start of this week, the inventor of the World Wide Web actually launched this new brand called A Contract for the Web, where it's supposed to be more kind of positive. And so I was quite happy to hear that. But for me, I'd like to see the EU kind of connecting more on a personal kind of level. And I'm going to keep coming back to the locale, because I believe in that the EU can't go ahead without all these different locales, what I call different drops of water, kind of all leading together to create some sort of a river of kind of interest. Mm. Those are kind of my interests. And I suppose I represent the Irish delegation on the Committee of the Regions, and I'm answerable to the Minister for Local Government in Ireland. I'm answerable to my own city council of what I'm doing out here. And so I have to find ways of translating all this information I'm actually getting out here. Mm. I've enjoyed the 2 days, and I agreed with one of the top points in terms of let's find a personal connection. That was one of the top concluding points actually that came out.
All politics is local. Mm. Stephen?
Well, that was actually, the personal connection was the key takeaway that was chosen by the participants as the most important one. So I will second that. And I will just say, because we don't have much time, that there were many takeaways that will be published on the website that were ranked by the participants. Each one of them has a lot of thinking behind it. And I think they're a great resource to answer that question. I'll defer to the website.
Perfect. And apart from this live stream, we also have a podcast series that will be coming out in the next 3 to 4 weeks. So stay tuned to this Facebook page for that. Stephen Boucher and Kieran McCarthy, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks.
I've just been speaking with Stephen Boucher, Managing Director at Foundation Euractiv, and Kieran McCarthy, member of the European Committee of the Regions and Cork City Council. And that's a wrap for the Europe.com podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you've enjoyed the series. If you don't want to stop here, you can check out my podcast, Social Media and Politics. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, signing off from Copenhagen. It's been a pleasure, and thanks for listening.